This is Don Hussig with Cancer Action Network. You're listening to Loving the Earth, Pollution Free Revolution. Today, I'm very pleased to have Dave Renaud on the line with us. Dave is one of the members of the board of directors of Prevent Cancer Now. He has a great background for having that position with Prevent Cancer Now. He's the union environment representative for the Canadian auto workers at the GM Oshawa Autoplex in Oshawa, Ontario, Canada. He's also the president of the Canadian Auto Workers Durham Regional Environmental Council. And Durham is a jurisdictional entity that exists in the southern part of Ontario in the vicinity of Oshawa and the Toronto region. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Donald, and thanks for giving me the chance to speak to your group and your listeners. Just one correction, my last name is said Renaud, but that's okay. I've heard it many different ways, and it's not a big issue.
Okay. I'm sure I can remember that Renaud. That reminds us of Rideau, and I just love that Rideau River and this whole, the French part of Canada. It seems like you're fortunate to have so much of the French in your society. Okay.
I wish I learned how to speak it when I was younger.
Pardon me?
I just wish I learned how to speak French when I was younger.
Well, I took some French in high school, and then I promptly didn't pursue it, and it seems like so many people now are bilingual, trilingual, they just have lots of skills in that realm, and I certainly would like to be able to speak French. I listen to French radio stations.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty good.
I don't understand all the words, but I'm learning a few of the words. Well, let's get going. Tell me about your part. What do you do on a, say as the days and the months and the time passes by, what has your involvement been with the Prevent Cancer Now organization?
What happened is I got involved some time ago. There's a woman named Liz Armstrong who wrote the book called 101 Solutions to Cancer Prevention. And a good friend of mine, Loretta Michaud, who worked for the Workers' Health and Safety Center, they got me involved with PCN, basically, by having me get involved with what was called the Run, Walk, and Roll for Cancer Prevention. Now, I had been involved with the environment prior to that through my union. I took some union courses up in Port Elgin, and decided that our local, which was the biggest in Canada at the time for the Canadian auto workers, didn't really have a strong environmental movement. So I took it back to our leadership, and we were able to form our CW Durham Region Environmental Council, and we represent 10 locals, about 33,000 members. And then we were able to get a standing committee, an environment standing committee, to work on community outreach on a local aspect. And with that, I was eventually appointed to the position of the CAW environment rep for the General Motors Autoplex here in Oshawa, which I've held the position since that time. In fact, one time I was full-time for 3.5 years until the downturn in the economy. Some of the positions were cut, and I'm down to one day a week as that representative. So I still work hands-on with assembling vehicles on the assembly line on a four-day-a-week basis. So what I was just trying to do is give some preempt to how I got involved with Liz and Loretta.
Yep.
And our Environment Council was always looking for ways to fund public forums and such, and we had done a few. And, of course, Liz and Loretta designed this Run, Walk, and Roll for Cancer Prevention, which is now called the Cancer Prevention Challenge. And at that time, you were allowed to get 40% of your funds, and they would go towards a community cancer prevention project. So what we did is we started getting busted loads of people and headed down to Ottawa to one of the biggest races in Canada. Like there's 2K, 5K, 10K, half marathon, full marathon, and there was rollerblading at the time too. And we were raising a lot of funds that way, and the rest of the money, of course, went to other organizations like the Women's Healthy Environment Network, and also helped fund the book that Liz and Guy Dauncey and Wordsworth wrote. So what we've done is basically, use that funding to get our community educated, get our communities involved, and we've continued to do that right through, right up to last year where it was our last fundraiser. Even though times were tough with the economy really hit hard, we were still able to do very well as far as our fundraising dollars go. And some of our newest initiatives are we're going to try to do some public outreach and give the public opportunities to listen to us speak about some great documentaries out there like Living Downstream and other documentaries that talk about cancer prevention. And we can do them in churches or town halls or service clubs and such. So we really want to get the people enrolled and invigorated to basically tackle cancer prevention. Now, all that led me to get involved with Prevent Cancer Now, which is our national organization. I actually, because Liz was involved in that, I asked them to get involved with the incinerator battle because I felt it was going to become a national issue. And we all know that incineration is emitting dioxins, which is a heavy carcinogen and furans and other mixed chemicals that are burnt at high temperature. And it takes us away from good, sustainable, green solutions. And so I said to Liz, look, we need to get involved in this. And she says, well, Dave, you know, if PCN, you want PCN to get involved, then maybe you should join the executive board. And so I did, and they actually did get involved, and they've had, I think we're in our third year campaign on the Say No to Incineration, which you can find a lot of data at our preventcancernow.ca website on that. And there's so many different issues we're involved in.
Yeah, I'm very interested in this matter of the Durham Region incinerator proposal. I'm on a listserv that Linda Gasser is on, and I've read her emails through the period of the past year or, you know, the considerable period of time now that this proposal has been gradually taking shape. And when I saw the message that was stating that the council, the Durham Regional Council, had given its approval to this proposal and that, you know, this is another big step in moving forward with actually building this incinerator and then operating it in this Durham region, I immediately answered her email, and that's how I actually got in touch with you and became aware of the Prevent Cancer Now organization and all these good things. So it isn't that everything that has to do with these proposals is bad. It's just that, you know, it's helping the people that have scientific knowledge and that have the caring about using knowledge to prevent cancer. It's bringing us together, and the good thing about that is that, you know, we're getting stronger, and hopefully this will not flourish. It will not, you know, become a reality. Probably one of the first environmental issues I was ever involved in, there was a proposal to construct a municipal solid waste incinerator in St. Lawrence County, which is across the river from, well, see, it starts about Kingston, you know, whatever's across from Kingston. I don't think there's any cities over on our side right across from Kingston. And then it goes up to Cornwall, nearly. And so we're across the river from Ontario in that stretch of Ontario. And there was a proposal to incinerate all the solid waste of St. Lawrence County. It was way back in the 80s. The government was for it. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation was all for this. The county government was all for it. And it was citizens, you know, just residents of St. Lawrence County that wanted to see a more, you know, a more environmentally reasonable solution to the trash problem that opposed this and over years and years of battling it prevented it from ever having, you know, ever, it wasn't constructed, it wasn't operated, it never happened. It was rejected. So I'm always interested in these types of issues. Tell me, what do you suspect will be the next, you know, what's going to happen next on this?
Well, already the next has already happened. The way our Durham region municipal government work, there's eight different tiers within that regional government. So different locations have their own municipal affairs, like they have their mayors and their councillors. And then they get elected, and then they have this overall municipal, Durham Region Municipal Council, and they have a chair that's unelected. His name is Roger Anderson. And because it's a partnership with another municipality, York Region, both the chairs, both unelected, have now signed the Covantic contract. Wow. After the Ministry of Environment has improved the environmental assessment for the incinerator. And they've done this. We just had an election for all mayors and councilors in all regional. And he was given the mandate that gave him the permission from the previous council to allow him to sign this contract. And we thought that, you know, with his good sense and all, that he would hold off and do it after the new council took their positions in December.
Yep.
And he didn't. He signed it anyway. Now, of course, politics comes into this quite, and I really believe that what he did is he called around to see who was going to support him as far as voting him in as the next chair for the next council. And
yep.
he found out that he had a majority, and he felt safe enough that he could sign this and get it through. And he did. And we will now be having a incinerator built in the region, I believe.
Huh. Well, it's
and
horrible.
Well, it's horrible. And you know what, Donald? I think it's the first of many. I think that many municipalities have been waiting to see what was going on with Durham because they used a full environmental assessment. And they didn't have to. Our provincial government, Mr. McGuinty, one of the liberals, decided that they were going to weaken the assessment level for incineration. And they made it so it could be done on a screening level assessment, which is quite minor compared to a full environmental assessment. But Durham went ahead with a full environmental assessment on it, which led all these other municipalities to wait and see what happened because there was quite a battle about it. And, you know, when I look at things like this, I always think of it as a war. You take on a large war. So there's going to be small battles you win and lose along the way. And I believe we won several small battles, even though we may have lost the war. We were able to educate people, get people thinking about waste, diversion, zero waste, incineration, health, cancer, cost, all the different things that sometimes just seems to slip through the cracks in order to get lobbyists what they need, which I believe really what this is about is lobbyists got what they wanted.
Well, it's very unfortunate, Andy. And see, we are very concerned. I'm concerned about it, you know, for the people that live where you live, but we're also concerned about it here in the St. Lawrence River Valley. We have higher cancer rates than average for New York State, and New York State has high cancer rates. And we have concluded that the reason we have these high cancer rates is because we're downstream from the Great Lakes. You know, being in the St. Lawrence River, so many chemicals that cause cancer are in our river. And then we're breathing the off-gassing from the river, and we're also, many of the cities, the city of Ahndersburg, there's only one city, the city of Ahndersburg, and then several other municipalities like the village of Messina, they draw their drinking water directly from the St. Lawrence River. They drink this water. Then there's this whole matter of what we're breathing. We're downwind from the O'Hare River Valley. We're downwind from so much of southern Ontario. We are to the east of so many smokestacks, and we just don't want one more smokestack added onto that because we've already got too many of them. There should be diminishing numbers of smokestacks to protect our health here in St. Lawrence County in the St. Lawrence River Valley rather than more smokestacks. And, you know, we're very clear on the fact that the incineration, no matter what they call it, whether it's gasification or closed loops gasification or whatever they want to call it, it ends up being a combustion process that creates dioxins and furans and PCBs and various other persistent organic pollutants, as well as metals. You know, it doesn't create the metals, it just releases them from the trash. And so these chemicals end up in the air. Tell me this. I misspoke earlier. I said that the Durham Regional Council had approved the incinerator proposal, but I'm glad you brought that up, that it was the Ministry of the Environment, the MOE, so it's the Environmental Assessment Board that approved the proposal?
Yeah, they've approved it. And, of course, the Regional Council had to vote in favor to have it go to the EA. So, yeah, you were correct in that aspect. It was approved by them to go to the EA, and, of course, the MOE, the Minister of Environment, has to make the final approval. And they have done so. And so they have signed it.
And now they signed it, too. Wow. So is there any rays of hope in this? How long is it going to take? Are they going to start building this tomorrow? Lots of times the funding ends up being a real obstacle. You know, they can get all this. We were involved. There was they call it chipboard, that oriented strand board. There was this OSB manufacturing plant proposal for very nearly this. It was the identical location where they had originally proposed to construct the incinerator for St. Lawrence County, and that was way back in the 80s, and then this new proposal came along in 2000, and our group, Cancer Action New York, opposed our kind of our battle cry. You spoke of, you know, fighting these wars, these battles. Our battle cry was not one more major source of cancer causing air pollution in the St. Lawrence River Valley, and we meant it since we brought these lawsuits against this shipboard manufacturing factory proposal. It's a huge combustion source. It was going to combust 1,000 tons of waste wood per day to produce, you know, to dry out the wood chips so they could be glued back together again and make the OSB, sub-building material. And so the way that we won was that the county was going to do these bonds that would facilitate the, you know, the money. There was no money. The entrepreneur that wanted to do this, he didn't have any money, and he had to get, you know, the money to get, you know, the thing built. And the way to interest the investors was to get bonding from county government. And so they couldn't do the bonding as long as the lawsuits existed. And then once the lawsuits were gone, the times had changed so much that it was no longer feasible to make oriented strand board in the St. Lawrence River Valley because of the high cost of diesel fuel, having to truck in the wood from such, you know, up in, way up in Quebec and up in, you know, Ontario, where there's just such a large, much larger, you know, forest resource, and the trucking distances are so much shorter to the mills, they can make it and make a profit even with high diesel fuel costs. But with high diesel fuel costs down here and, you know, the longer distances to do the trucking without, you know, we get a lot of farms and open fields here in St. Lawrence County that they wouldn't be, you know, harvesting trees from. And so it fell through, and we were pleased that they never built that smokestack and added some more poison to our air supply. But so what's the funding like for this deal?
Well, what's happening is it's going to cost close to $14 million in annual operating costs to run it, and that's a pretty expensive option. And what's now happening is our gas tax funding that we get from the Ontario government is also going to be going into that. So that gas tax funding was supposed to be used for, you know, retrofitting roads and repairs and bridges and such. It's now going to go into the incinerator. And I think a lot of it has to do with land use zoning. I mean, the regional government, you know, has a mandate to zone different areas for the other smaller municipalities. And you always wonder if there was smaller deals made to ensure that some of those in politics voted in favor of it. But right now, when I see what happened with this election, almost 50% of those that have been elected are actually opposed to it, and it looks like they're still going to go forward with it. But one of the things I wanted to mention was that my union is absolutely opposed to the use of residual or using incineration for the use of residual waste, and actually sent a resolution along with our Durham Region Labor Council, which is a smaller labor body that represents the unions locally in our municipality, to the Canadian Labor Congress, which is the largest union body for all of Canada, and it includes many different unions and millions of members. Our CLC has also signed a resolution in opposition to the use of incineration on residual municipal waste, and also ICI. Now, the reason why people go, why are the unions opposed to this? It's going to bring jobs. Well, not necessarily is it going to bring a lot of jobs.
Right.
This incinerator is only going to hire 31 people, and it's going to have some part-time construction. And a lot of the work is going to be actually shipped back to New York because they're going to be shipping some of that waste down there. I'm talking about the toxic gas. You're still left with 25%, right?
So where's that going?
It's going to go to New York.
But do you know where?
Not exactly.
Maybe Seneca Meadows. That's where the toxic ash from the Onondaga County incinerator goes. The biggest landfill in the whole Northeast is Seneca. It's a privately owned landfill. I was just on the phone this morning trying to discover. I was talking to you about being a cancer detective, and so what I'm doing is calling the Seneca Falls Wastewater Treatment Facility because they accept the leachate from the Seneca Meadows landfill that gets this toxic ash from the Onondaga County incinerator. And I talked to the guy that runs the wastewater treatment facility. He said to me, I better not answer those questions. I don't really think I'm one, you know, I'm high enough up on the totem pole to be answering these questions about whether the metals are removed from the leachate before they go into Cayuga Lake, which is one of the Finger Lakes in central New York State. It's where the wastewater discharges from the Seneca Falls wastewater treatment facility. And so he told me to contact an engineering group in Rochester, and I proceeded to do that by calling up the head of the Public Works Department in the village of Seneca Falls. And he told me he didn't know if he wanted me talking to the engineering group that deals with this this facility of his. And so, you know, we're just having to argue a little about what people have the right to know. And eventually we will know what kind of processes they utilize there and whether they do remove the metals, which I do not. I don't know if there's any technology that removes metals from wastewater before it's discharged. So it'll be interesting to get it all nailed down. But when you said about the ash coming down here, I'm thinking Seneca Meadows.
Yeah, well, there is a Covanta incinerator in New York. Actually many of them. And I already know that there are some industries that are actually shipping to that incinerator in the New York area. But what I wanted to get to, and one of the things I wanted to mention, Donald, is that, like, why would the unions get involved in this? And it's not just about jobs either. Because if we think there's other alternatives out there that produce a lot better jobs, better paying jobs,
yep.
And we think stabilized landfill is an opportunity that has only been looked at once in Canada. And they have a stabilized landfill in the Halifax area in Nova Scotia. And there they produced several jobs in the front end through the sorting and ensuring that no recyclable, reusable, or compostable material would go into that landfill, which is leachate-lined and built in a way that it doesn't large impacts to the watershed.
Yep.
And on the outside, they also built a lot of facilities that would take some of that construction material or recyclable material, and they produced close to 3,000 jobs. That's the kind of stuff I want to see. That's a sustainable
right.
solution with a green path. And where we go one step forward with labor is we want to force manufacturers and industries and packagers to design their products for the environment. And if you burn it, you take that impetus away from them to design it for the environment. We believe that if they got to do it correct the first time and ensuring that they're going to have to deal with it correctly in the second time, they're going to use sustainable products in there. We could be using biodegradable products like hemp, jute, rami, all those different organic materials instead of using stuff that is used from a petroleum base. You know where I'm going on that?
Yep. It's certainly the way to go.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I've always just hated incineration because it's an illusion. You know, people think they got rid of the stuff by burning it. They just put it in the air. They dumped it in the air, and then we all end up breathing a little of this and a little of that and more than a little as more and more of these, you know, smokestacks, whether it's an incinerator or any other combustion source, or say the huge metal processing facilities in Sudbury and these parts of Ontario, there are so many chemicals that last a long time, such as the POPs, dioxins, PCBs, and the metals, which last forever. You know, the metals that are put into the air by a smelter, they are there, and there are dioxin emissions associated with hot metal processes. We're breathing all that, and then to even think it's truly outrageous that people in this day and age would even propose to do something as bad as burning trash, you know, make it easy to get rid of this in this mistaken kind of sense of ease. There's nothing easy about causing people to breathe more and more chemicals that are already causing far too much harm in them. It's outrageous. It really is. And I hope that the people that got elected that are opposed to this proposal will dump the proposal before it gets any further, you know, along, you know. Hopefully there'll be like this, I know, a little revolution on that regional council, and they will just turn that contract into confetti.
Oh, we can only hope, Donald, I'll tell you. But one of the things, too, you know, you got to think about is that, you know, they promise they're going to use all these best emission standards and monitoring to ensure that, you know, the pollution isn't going to impact humanity and such.
Smoke and mirrors.
They're only testing for 5 different contaminants.
That is sick.
It's horrible. Go ahead.
Do they require continuous emissions monitoring for anything?
Let me think here. There'll be only a handful of hundreds of compounds that are going to be admitted, will be monitored continuously.
Okay.
And that is five components I talked about. Many other chemical compounds of unknown toxicity will be monitored or regulated at all.
That's,
so it begs the question, if high emissions could be detected, is it then too late for the people exposed to them?
That's right. There was a Covanta incinerator someplace on the eastern seaboard. I always get my Massachusetts and Connecticut. You know, they're just, you know, it's hard for me to remember which one of those two particular states has a particular incident, you know, something took place there. But sometime during the past several months, there was a lot of news coverage of the fact that the attorney general in one of these eastern seaboard states was suing a Covanta incinerator for their excess emissions. You know, somehow they discovered there were excess emissions. I don't know how they discovered this when the laws are so bad here in the U.S. that there is not even the data, and this is about dioxide emissions. The data on dioxide emissions is only obtained once a year by stack testing on notice to the facility when the situation is that in Europe, in Belgium, they have continuous dioxin emissions monitoring. It goes on constantly. The data is recorded, transferred to, you know, the proper authorities. And so people see what is happening on a daily basis. And there's a lot of variability in the dioxin emissions depending upon the conditions of the combustion as well as the fuel. And for the U.S., and I'm sure Canada, I highly suspect that Canada does not do any continuous emissions monitoring for dioxins because we don't do it at all here. Nothing like that is done in the U.S. And yet we do. There's this history now, this example where in either Massachusetts or Connecticut at a Covanta incinerator, there were high dioxin emissions, and they somehow caught it, and now they're trying to force them to do something about it. In Syracuse was where this Onondaga County solid waste incinerator, this Covanta incinerator, is located, very large. They do not monitor their dioxin emissions except for once a year by stack testing. They have a Clean Air Act operating permit. It's supposed to be renewed every 5 years because the whole idea is there's new science that comes along, there's new history that comes along, there are new knowledge that comes into play, such as these problems at the other Covanta incinerator. Every 5 years, they're supposed to renew their operating license. They do this as if they were just stamping, you know, just rubber stamping something that has to be done. You know, they don't do any science. We requested that this Covanta and this Onondaga County Resource Recovery Association, this OCRA, and that New York State DEC work together to do a updated health risk assessment in order to renew this operating license for this huge incinerator. They said no. They had done a health risk assessment back in the early 1990s, which meant the science for their health risk assessment was no more current than the 1980s and maybe a couple research papers from the early 1990s. There has been a huge amount of new science published on dioxin and cancer since the late 1990s, and it's clear that the reason the Onondaga County solid waste incinerator is being re-permitted without doing a new health risk assessment is because they'd have to shut it down if they did a new health risk assessment, because it's so clear that dioxin exposure causes so much more cancer than it was understood to be the case back at the time they did this first and only health risk assessment. So there's a lot of smoke and mirrors. There's a lot of cheating. There's a lot of lack of using science to protect public health that goes on here in the U.S. when it comes to air pollution, and especially when it comes to incinerating solid waste. So I'm so glad to hear that your groups are concerned about incineration and that you are focusing on this lack of monitoring of the emissions. These empty assurances that government and industry give to the public about things being done to protect public health, they are so empty and so much less than what science makes possible. They don't even come close. We've asked for years that EPA would require continuous emissions monitoring for dioxins. Years ago, we brought that to their attention and asked them to deal with that, and nothing happens.
You know, and we just got to keep plugging forward. And there's so many different issues we got to deal with. I mean, look at the port of ban on asbestos. We've been working so hard on that.
Tell me more about that. Let's shift over to this asbestos problem. And I want to throw in one little piece of kind of background on that. One of the members of our organization has cancer, and her oncologist told her it could have been caused by an occupational exposure to asbestos that she received when she was working at this Newell Corporation factory in the city of Ogdensburg. This is Michelle Reed. She's dealing with cancer now, possibly because of an asbestos exposure. One of the other members of our group, he's a retired Union Carbide chemist, and he always makes the point that in the late 1800s, 1897 or some late 1800 date, that it was well agreed in the community of knowledge that asbestos exposure caused cancer. And then because commerce is always given top priority in our country and around the world, truly, asbestos is still a part of so many people's exposure. Your group is working to raise awareness about the need to bring an end to the use of asbestos. Tell us more about that.
Well, you know, Canada is a world leader in marketing and the sale of the deadly substance, asbestos. And we know that there's a huge impact on what it has caused as far as death in the world. The WHO, the World Health Organization, estimates that between 5 and 10 million people will ultimately die from asbestos-related diseases. And in Canada, asbestos-related disease is the most significant contributor to occupational mortality. Well, there's a lot of room for us to make some improvement here, and we understand that there's a lot of delay. The Canadian government is causing some delay in it, and I also understand that some unions are also trying to delay us from having make some headway on this. And it's a lot about jobs, as you stated. It's a lot about money. And how do we get past this? I think it's where we have to get less apathetic citizenry. They need to be more involved. They need to understand the issue. They need to go to websites such as ours, such as yours, read about the issue, communicate it to their family, communicate it with their friends, and start to take action. You know, visit some of their municipal, provincial, or federal political jurisdiction people and talk to them and air their beefs out. Otherwise, we're not going to make any headway.
Yeah, what we've discovered here in the U.S., Dave, it's kind of shocking and kind of disheartening in a degree, but it's also a great challenge. You know, I talk to people and they say, well, the deer learn to run as fast as it runs because of the wolf. This is part of our challenge, you know, to just be bigger than what we would have been otherwise and faster and stronger and better because of the great challenge we encounter. And our challenge here in the U.S. at this moment is that our federal government, our Congress, the U.S. House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate, they are so tremendously controlled by corporations. You know, the many, many powerful, wealthy corporations with all their money and status and infrastructure and people and just all their power. It's basically a matter of power. They have got their claws so strongly into our federal government that the federal government is nothing more than just kind of like all the corporations taken together, you know. It's very awful, and we feel like we need to have this huge change in our country to ever get even close to doing what you just said about people using their knowledge about chemicals that cause cancer to have, you know, lower and then no cancer risk because they don't get exposed, don't get those chemicals in their bodies. And we're just finding it absolutely outrageous what the federal government's doing right now. Our Food and Drug Administration, that's kind of like the equivalent of Health Canada in many ways. The Food and Drug Administration in the U.S., they're responsible for protecting the food supply. And yet they do not even have a strategy. They don't have a policy. They have nothing to say about persistent organic pollutants, these POPs, that include dioxins and PCBs and polybrominated diphenyl ethers and many old pesticides, many pesticides that are still in use. They have no policy on this. I can't even get them to talk to me on the record. One scientist in the whole FDA can't get one scientist in the whole FDA to talk about, you know, what's FDA doing about POPs in the food supply. You know, these chemicals that are in all the animal fats of the whole world and that are in the food supply in the U.S. and they cause more than an acceptable amount of cancer based on the science, can't get FDA to even talk about it on the record. And it's because they can't talk about it on the record. Their history is so bad, they allow our food manufacturers to use waste animal fat in the production of food animal feeds. So all they're doing is recycling these chemicals like dioxins and PCBs in the food supply that people eat and that pets, you know, pets eat, dogs and cats eat this same food supply. Worse, really, because they're getting the dog food and cat food that is higher waste animal fat content than, you know, the foods that we eat that just got the waste animal fat content chemicals in it from being fed that. It's unreal what goes on with FDA and food quality. And we're just trying to hold them accountable on this. And they just basically say, you know, we don't want to talk to you about it. We're not going to talk to you about it. You know, just buzz off. I'm sure your country has a lot of the same problems. But we certainly consider our federal government to be the worst federal government that ever existed. And it's about money and it's about power. And we want the power. If we're going to be a democracy, then we have to start something over again here because it's gotten to the point where it's not even close. No one that can think would dare call this a reasonable example of a democracy. It's not a democracy unless you think it's democratic for corporations to just fight amongst themselves for who's going to control. That's not a democracy. It's not people. They're not people. They're corporations, and they don't deserve to behave, you know, as they do. You know, we're angry about it, and we want to see it changed, and yet we come up against the wall, you know, the wall of all their power.
Well, you know what? One of the things, I was interviewed on the election night for the municipality, and one of the things I mentioned, because it was such a low voter turnout, some cases only 20%.
Wow.
And that's disgusting. I mean, you know, when you think about these are the actual people that are going to have the biggest impact on your life. Municipally, you have the biggest impact. You know, provincially, you don't even get those type of numbers provincially or federally in those elections. So my suggestion is we've got to get, and you and I, we're not alarmists. I think we're educators. We're looking at educating people to get involved in the issue. And we need to start at a young age. And we already know who controls the education system. It's the government. But who controls the government? It's us. We control it. We need to get at the youth in the schools and say, you know what? You need to take a good look at what the government is doing. You need to understand it, and you need to educate yourself on it. You need to be active. And it has to start right in the primary grades, teaching them about the responsibility of being involved in the electoral voting process, which I believe they're so apathetic. And listen to this example. That day, I get a call on my cell phone, and I won't say who it is, but somebody I know very well calls me up and says, I'm in the voting booth. Who do I vote for? I go, excuse me? I don't even think this is legal for you to do this. But, you know, I felt like I had to tell him. I said, you know, okay, this is who I think you should vote for. And
okay, one of your kids, right?
You're right. It was. It was one of my kids. And oh, my God. Did I ever give it to him after that? I said, wake up, man. Start reading the paper. Start seeing what's going on. Don't let me make decisions for you. This is your life. This is your city. You've got to take some responsibility. All about that.
Oh, true.
You know, how do we get them people to do that? We got to educate them. We got to get it in the schools. That's what I believe. It's got to start there.
Well, what
I think parents do.
What we're doing?
Go ahead.
We go to the schools. The school that is the closest to where I live. It's only a couple miles from where I live. It's called the Colton Pierpont. And, you know, it's a school. You know, it's got everything from kindergarten right up through senior in high school. And I do an information table during the cafeteria break for all these kids. There are third graders and fourth graders. You know, every age group comes by the information table. and they look at our threefold display board with the posters on it about various cancer causers that are pollution. We focus entirely on pollutant carcinogens, how people get exposed to them. We want people to know the name of the chemical. We want them to know where it is in the environment and how they can reduce their exposure to it by preventing the pollution in the first place and avoiding the existing pollution. So these kids come by there and we talk and we have music. Music is such a powerful part of life. So we have some music, and I love to dance. I do this environmental dancing, and they say he's dancing peace, and they say he's dancing this. And I say, no, I'm dancing mindfulness, and I'm dancing love of the earth, and we actually do use some Indian drumming. I think it came from some Canadian Indians. And so that feels good. That is going somewhere, and it's the future, and I have a lot of hope for it. What kind of, you know, you were mentioning some movies, the Living Downstream movie. And you're going to show that, so you're planning on showing this at a public event someplace in your area?
Yes, we are. We're going to be doing that. We've held several different forums at our Union Hall in different locations. Some of the ones, like we had Elizabeth May come out, we had Liz Armstrong, several names that are right out there in the top of the cancer prevention in Canada. And what we do is we get good crowds out. Some of the crowds we've had out, at one of the incineration rallies we had, over 300 people showed up to listen to Dr. Paul Connett and several professionals on incineration. But we continue to look at different avenues, like different documentaries that would educate them. Go ahead, Donald.
Well, what we did, when you mentioned having public forums, that is exactly what we believe in doing locally. We brought David Carpenter. He is an international expert on these pops. He's done a lot of work on fish contamination on the St. Lawrence River and around the world. The farmed salmon, you may have heard him interviewed about the farmed salmon and what terribly high levels of the pops that are in the bodies of the farmed salmon, because, see, they're feeding these farmed salmon so much of the fish meal, which is giving them a huge dose of the pops, because it's all in the animal fat. Dr. Carpenter came here to St. Lawrence County in early November. It was our public forum on pollution and cancer. And see, this is the difference between your situation and our situation. We had a great speaker. We'd worked hard on it for months, and we got between 20 and 30 people. But see, for our area, for St. Lawrence County, that was a big turnout because we had some good government representation. We had some good kind of public organizations representation. We have an Environmental Management Council. It was well represented. And the people that came, there was a discussion, and we are moving strongly, one step at a time, toward educating St. Lawrence County about these pops in the food supply. And it's a little bit of a rocky road here because, see, the biggest industry in St. Lawrence County is the dairy industry. You know, they are producing this food that is contaminated with these chemicals that are well known to cause cancer. And they are hesitant to support public education on this. But you know, the truth of it is, they are moving into that, you know, that realm. The town of Lisbon has a town board. I don't know what your local governments are like up there. I'm sure they're somewhat similar but different too. We have town boards. We have townships and town boards and then county government. And the town of Lisbon, the town of Canton, you know, many of these towns that have more dairy farmers, you know, that are making the money than anybody else, they supported a resolution of ours, Cancer Action New York resolution, that calls for public education on these persistent organic pollutants in the food supply and how people can reduce their consumption by eating less animal fat. You know, they're willing to come right out and support that kind of resolution because that is the current situation. That is one of the big cancer causers, these dioxins, which will be emitted by your, you know, hope. I mean, I take it back, which would be emitted by this proposed Jerem Regional Incinerator. Dioxins in animal fat, meaning the beef, the pork, the chicken, the eggs, you know, the milk, the dairy products, anything that has animal fat containing it. We get dosed with dioxin that way, and that's why you and I and everybody else has body burdens of dioxin and these other persistent organic pollutants. Well, the dairy farmers in Lisbon and Canton and some of the other towns here in St. Lawrence County, they say, tell the people about that because they need to know how to reduce their cancer risk. People care about it. They care about it a lot.
Yeah, and that Living Downstream is a great video. If you have a chance to show that, you'll like that one. I just want to mention, our PCN is actually going to be doing a speaker tour, seminars, And what we're going to be doing is showing a PowerPoint presentation called Prevention is the Cure. And we're hoping to get these cancer prevention lecture series put out all across Canada. It's going to start piloting in the Ottawa area. And Jake Cole has been working really hard on that. He's our co-chair on our committee for our executive board for PCN. So
how's the
that'll give us more exposure.
Yeah. Tell me this. I want to go. I want to, you know, educate the public here. See, Ottawa is only 60 miles from lots of St. Lawrence County. You know, Ogdensburg is right across the river from Prescott, and then just right up the 416 to Ottawa, 60 miles, you know, 45 minutes away, you know. How can the people where I live know when your lecture in the Ottawa area is going to be taking place?
Well, you'll need to go to our preventcancernow.ca website, and on there there's a listing of up-and-coming events, and you can do it there. And also what they can do is they can go to that website, and they can also sign on to an email list. And there's also a declaration you can sign on to. We'd love to see more names on that declaration. It's for cancer prevention. These are all great ideas, too, that you can adapt for your organization. I think.
So what's the website address one more time?
Okay, it's preventcancernow.ca. Now.ca.
Okay, preventcancernow.ca. That's a really good one. A long time ago, I was looking around at URLs, and I was finding that so many of the cancer prevention URLs, some of them weren't the most honorable of organizations that had these URLs. There was this group that I looked at their literature, and they were just talking about screening and early detection. There was nothing in there about pollution and cancer, or very, very, very little. So I'm glad you guys got one of the good URLs. We came up with the URL preventcancernow.com, and then we just kind of felt like, well, we don't want to really be a .com, so we never really did anything with it. But we've got that URL, and I think that maybe we should make a moneymaker out of it. But I just don't, I don't know, I'm just not into making. I don't, it's truly something about me that I feel like that making money and preventing cancer don't mix. You know, I just kind of feel like I'd rather have it be more like this Jesus-type stuff, you know, where it was about love and goodness of spirit and intention, and that we're doing these things to, you know, protect the public, not to make money. And I just never got very far with using the preventcancernow.com URL. And I'm so glad yours is preventcancernow.ca.
But, you know, you read our mission, right, which is to create a national movement for cancer prevention, to entrench the use of the precautionary principle, to divert more funds to primary prevention from the current 2% and act in what we know prevents cancer, to improve regulations and policies to end environmental and workplace exposures to carcinogens, and to support individuals, especially marginalized groups, communities, businesses, and governments to reduce or eliminate cancer-causing exposures. And you know what? It isn't about making money. Every one of us are volunteers. We have a part-time staff person. You know, eventually we'd love to have full-time. I mean, because you can get more action done that way.
That's right. Well, making money when it's used for doing this good work, that's all good and fine. It's well, the way the corporations have so much power with all their money, we can learn that lesson from them. There's certainly honorable ways of making and using money in cancer prevention. I just want to say that you guys have a really powerful kind of path that you are on and that you've kind of gotten going. When did this all start?
I actually talked to Liz last night, who was part of the starting of it, and she was telling me what happened was there was she goes back to whenever they were supposed to have this book released by 2006, the 101 Solutions to Cancer Prevention, and it couldn't happen, and so we had a big conference. And it was a huge conference in Ottawa that had some 40 different speakers at it. And this was back in 2006, and there were signing on. So there were 15 people that got on several phone calls, and they decided they had to do something more than just write a book and have a conference. They had to start an organization that could really be proactive and move us towards some of the proactive measures you and I spoke about today.
Yep.
And I really hope that one day you actually do interview Liz. I think you'll find her a fabulous person. Her heart is absolutely in the right direction. And Jake Cole, who's one of our co-chairs, I sent him an email from you one time, and he read it. He gets back to me. Do you think we should get a hold of these people? They sound like they're right up our alley. And you know what? That's the reason I kept forwarding the emails from your group. Your group has been very proactive in a lot of the things we believe in. So don't stop what you're doing. Keep bringing more people on board. Excellent thing to do.
Sounds like this is, I believe in movements, you know, people growing larger together and have like these social movements. I'm thinking that there's going to be a Prevent Cancer Now movement, you know, that'll sweep our two countries and everything will be different, you know, say 10 years from now. It'd be so cool.
Yeah. You know what? You got to stay positive. You got to think positive.
That's right.
That's the type of things that make change happen.
That's right. Well, Dave, thank you so much for being one of my greatest interviews. It's all about the energy. You know, you have this passion and this clearness of mind and this vision. It's truly, it's being a leader is what it is. You're a leader in this cancer prevention world. Thanks so much for talking about this and talking with everybody else you talk to about it, because people talking is the revolution. It really is.
Yeah, you're right there. And thank you, Donald, for everything you're doing. And keep up the good work.
Yep. Have a wonderful holiday season.
I will. You too.
Bye.
Thanks again. Bye.
This is Don Hussig with Cancer Action Network. You've been listening to Loving the Earth Pollution-Free Revolution, Dave Renau, and Prevent Cancer Now. There's a rhyme that will ring along in the halls of time. Dave Renau and Prevent Cancer Now, this is the future. This is cancer prevention. This is using science to prevent cancer. Viva the revolution. Have a great holiday season. Bye.